Hey, this is John Lee Dumas of the award-winning podcast, Entrepreneurs on Fire, and you're listening to the Excelsior Journeys with George Soroy. Prepare to ignite.
So would you say that that's kind of like the lightning bolt moment for
you? And that's
why
I taught myself how to draw, was actually the Little Mermaid, drawing stills of Ariel.
I've got better things to do tonight than die.
Sylvester jumped out of his chair and said, who the F is this?
I remember walking out of the theater with him saying, I'm going to write Halloween.
I'm rather impressed with your research. Rarely do people ask me about Children in the Corn.
It doesn't have to be perfect. Just do it. You know, throw some spaghetti against a wall. See if it sticks.
This is George Soroy saying to all of you, ever upward. Welcome back to Excelsior Journeys, the road to creativity. This is George Soroy, and thank you so much for being here. And one of the things that I really love to hear from are different people that are making their mark in all different types of media. And that's what we have here with our guest this week. T.Y. Lee is a Korean-American writer, and he's also the creator of the 140-page graphic novel called The Return of the Rooftop Koreans. And what he did with his own journey is he was able to take the whole story of the 1992 LA riots, and he was able to turn that into a full-color graphic novel that focuses on resilience, identity, and the courage of ordinary people that are put into extraordinary circumstances. He has been around on various different podcasts, and he's spoken about different things such as how to take a raw idea and to turn it into a fully realized creative project. He's spoken about collaborating with artists and editors and designers. And he's also talking about how personal identity and history can fuel the creative process. One of the things that we always talk about on here is that people may say that all the stories have been told, but that's not true because your stories have not been told. And what I've seen so far from T.Y. Lee, he is definitely a perfect example of that. So it is my pleasure to introduce my guest this week, T.Y. Lee. Lee, how are you, sir?
Hi, George. I'm doing great. And thanks for having me on. I'm excited to be here.
As am I. I am always fascinated to hear about how people are able to take an idea, take their story, and turn it into a graphic novel format. That's something that I have been fascinated with, and it's something that I've always wanted to do for my own stuff. So I feel like I'm going to be picking your brain here for a bit today. So this is going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah. You know, I'm a big fan of comic books and graphic novels, and I've essentially been reading comic books since I was a very little kid. And, you know, I've collecting like thousands of comic books, and over the years, you know, I've eventually got to the point where I just didn't want to be like a consumer of books, but I also want to be like a creator, which is kind of what got me started on becoming a comic book writer. So that's kind of like how my journey started off. So one of the first comic books that I read growing up as a kid was a book called Hokbori Yeongam, which is a Korean comic, which is like loosely based off of a Korean folk tale about like a guy who has these two large, or I mean, just like just one large tumor growing out of his face, and it's really huge. And because he was a humble, good man, a goblin actually ends up cutting off his tumor, which then turns into a bag of gold. And then there was another man who also has the same tumor, but he's really greedy and evil. And a goblin punishes him by giving him a second large tumor under his face. So he has like two giant tumors. And this like comic book was like the first real experience for me into comic books. And this like story just really stayed with me over the years. You know, when it came to my graphic novel, Return of the Rooftop Koreans, that actually first started, like the idea first popped in my head somewhere in 2020 during the COVID-19 pandemic, but it was really in 2022 where I finally decided that I want to take this story and bring it to life. And that's when I first began writing the script, which eventually got to the point where now the graphic novel is complete. It's completely done. It's now on Kickstarter and pretty much.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
So it's not only finished, but now it's like moving forward as a Kickstarter. Was it able to get fully funded already?
Yeah. So it is fully funded. But the thing is, it wasn't really like crowdfunded. Like I funded it myself. I'm simply just using Kickstarter as like a pre-order platform.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
Yeah. So I've seen like lots of other people do it. Like they will take like 100% finished comic books or graphic novels and just use Kickstarter for getting pre-orders. And that's kind of what I'm doing. As I said earlier, the book is 100% done. Mm-hmm. Just needs to be printed. And I plan on having it printed soon. And it should be 100% completely done and shipped to everyone who pre-ordered the book before Christmas 2025.
That's fabulous. And that is such a great way to do it, too, because everyone knows the Kickstarter platform. So it's real easy to just kind of take them over there. They don't have to go out of their way. They can just, if they already have a Kickstarter account, they can just go ahead and put it through without just with the press of a few buttons. That's something that I'm going to remember to tell my current publishers, because we have been talking about turning one of my own trilogies into a graphic novel. So when that time comes, that's definitely what we're going to do.
And another advantage of using Kickstarter is that you'll also get like organic traffic, like people who will just like find the project organically. Mm-hmm. And you really can't get that if you're like using your own website, because if you have your own website, mm-hmm. you're essentially responsible for like 100% of all the traffic that goes there.
Yeah.
So you got to like spend like a lot of money on ads. And then, of course, you got to build a site and you got to make sure that it's secure so hackers can like hack it and steal customer information. And it's cost a lot of money to do it like that. So I definitely can see why like a lot of people will use like Kickstarter to be like a pre-order platform for their comics or graphic novels.
That's great. I love that. I think that's a terrific way to do that. And it's a great way to grab onto the algorithms that are already established. So where did all this start? One of the things I love to hear about is what I call the road to creativity. And that's where you either experience something or meet someone and it just makes you want to say like, that's what I really need to do. So you're either doing one thing and then you decide you want to just get on that exit ramp and all of a sudden you're on a whole different path. Was reading those Korean graphic novels when you were younger, was that the real impetus for all of this, or was there something before that?
So I would say it's mostly reading these Korean comics that really like first got me into comics in the first place. Like that was like my first.
Want to get into storytelling? Yeah.
Yeah. Like it was my first real experience with comic books. And since then I've like fallen in love with comics. And I don't know if you're familiar with Shonen Jump. I don't know if you've ever heard of that.
Shonen Jump.
So Shonen Jump is like a Japanese kind of like a large magazine that's filled with like lots of different comics. So these are like mm-hmm. serialized comics. So every month there's like a new volume of Shonen Jump. However, with Korean comics, there's something called Champ. So Champ is like this large magazine that has multiple serialized short comics in there. Mm-hmm. And reading that, as well as reading, kind of like really got me into the world of comics. And eventually I started exploring American comics from Marvel, DC, Image, and I really loved the Spawn comics.
Oh, yeah. And, Spawn.
Yeah. Eventually, I think like the first time I actually thought about creating my own comic was in high school. I got really bored. So I decided to try creating my first comic book, which I drew using a ballpoint pen. And I also wrote it. And it was like really, really bad.
I laugh because that's exactly what I was doing when I was passing the time when I was in elementary school. My friends and I would just kind of create our own characters, and they were as boxy as you can get. Like it was just very rudimentary, just like a square head and a rectangle body and rectangle arms and legs. So it was really just very, very simple. But as time went on, I just kept on picking at them because I knew there was something there. And that eventually led to one of my two trilogies of books. So it's amazing what can happen when you grab onto those and just keep on picking at them. Because I was filling steno notebooks with these stories. And yeah, they were pretty bad. But at the same time, they got my English teacher's attention and she really liked them. So that was something.
Yeah. A couple of years back, I was visiting my mom and I was going through boxes filled with my old stuff and I actually found some of those really bad comics that I drew.
Oh.
Looking back at those comics, I realized that they're just like really, really bad. And eventually years later, I decided that I was going to give another shot with comics. But this time I was only going to write. Obviously, I can't draw. I'm a terrible artist. So my plan was to essentially write a comic, get that professionally edited by an editor, and then hire other artists to actually draw the comic and bring that to life. So mm-hmm. that's kind of where Return of the Rooftop Korean started, which, yeah, so that's like inspired by the 1992 LA riots. And I don't know if, for the listeners out there, you guys are familiar with the 1992 LA riots, but essentially there was a guy named Rodney King who was beat up by four crooked LAPD officers who took things way too far. Yeah. Yeah. And eventually these four police officers, they were acquitted, and that like resulted on like gasoline being poured on like a fire, and it resulted in the LA riots. And because of the LA riots, there was just so much chaos going on. Like the LAPD, they were overwhelmed. So they decided mm-hmm. to like focus on only protecting like rich neighborhoods like Beverly Hills, and other neighborhoods such as Koreatown were pretty much left without any protection. So many Korean American small business owners decided to like stand on the rooftops of their stores holding guns to try to deter criminals and looters. They eventually became known as the Rooftop Koreans. It's a very important story for many Korean Americans. When the LA riots were happening, I was really young, so I didn't really know what was going on. I learned about the LA riots as I got older and learned about the Rooftop Koreans. I really like this unique story. Something I found is that this story of the Rooftop Koreans has not actually been told in comic book formats. So I figured, hey, maybe I should be the first one to do that. And that's kind of when I started writing Return of the Rooftop Koreans. Originally, I wanted to be like a very historically accurate story, but I had like difficulty making that work. So like there was a lot of conflicting information out there, like news reports conflicted with reports from people I actually spoken to. Like, for instance, my uncle lived in Koreatown during the LA riots, but like his version of the story is like very different from like the version of the story you get from like a article on like the Associated Press or Reuters. And
yeah, because these guys were there.
Yeah.
And not only were they there, but they were also providing a perspective that no one else was there to present.
No, because of that, I decided I want to focus on, rather than telling a historically accurate story, a more fictional story that like that's like takes place in the present day, but is like strongly inspired by the 1992 LA riots and the Rooftop Koreans. So that's kind of what my book is. It's like kind of like a homage to the Rooftop Koreans of 1992.
Nice. Nice. That sounds like a blast too. Almost like vigilantes coming in, right?
Yeah. So it's definitely got that vigilante feel. And obviously there's a lot of comic books that are about vigilantes, and pretty much the whole superhero genre is based off vigilantes. Yep. That's why I feel like Rooftop Koreans as a comic book works well, because they're like vigilantes in a way.
Yeah. And so what was it like when you had the idea, you're able to put the story into play, you're able to even speak with some people that were there, and so you're able to get more context, more research, and a better understanding of what was going on. And then, so you went ahead and just wrote it out. Was that basically the plan, just kind of writing it out into the comic book script format? Because that's a very specific type of format to use. You got to basically just like break down exactly what's going on.
Yeah. So the first thing I did was I decided to like research comic book writing. So there's a book, I think it's called Comic Book Writing for Dummies, that I read. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's a really great book that tells you how to format a story in comic book format. And and then there was another book that I read regarding story structure called Saves the Cat, which was a really great book. Yeah, I'm guessing you've read that one.
I know of it, yeah. There's a whole franchise dedicated to it. It's about novel writing, screenwriting, and it's all about that. So, yeah, that's a good method, something for people to remember.
Yeah, so it's like that book, Saves the Cat, Comic Book Writing for Dummies, and there was another book. I don't remember the title or the author, but it was like a book that focused purely on character arcs, like how to write characters. In fact, I think that's the name of the book, How to Write Character Arcs. Another great thing about the internet is that you can actually go on Google and find scripts for well-known comic books out there. Like, I've been able to go on Google and find scripts for like Spider-Man and Batman. And I found that like every comic book writer, they tend to like structure their scripts slightly differently, and they all have a slightly different way of writing. You know, reading their scripts kind of taught me how to write comic books. So I learned by watching how they wrote their scripts. That's kind of how I learned to write a script, and what my process was for writing the script, to just try to copy the best.
Yeah, it's a good way to do it. It's just like the old adage when they say, if you're going to steal, steal from the best. And so that's a great way to do it. I've also seen other books like Stan Lee's Guide to Writing Comics and Alan Moore's Guide to Writing Comics. That one's very, very popular as well.
But I should definitely check them out.
I've heard I started reading one particular book about kind of getting into writing comics. And one of the books that they mention as a big help for them moving forward was Alan Moore's book. So that would be something to definitely pick up. So when this was all finished, what was the plan next? Were you able to find the right artist to work with you on this?
So before finding an artist, I did hire a professional editor. I mean, I've actually read some indie comics that I've gotten from Kickstarter or Indiegogo. You can clearly tell they're not professionally edited. The writing is just really bad. I went on a read-see. And I found a guy named Matt, who is a professional comic book editor. He's edited lots of different comic books, and I hired him to edit the script. And so we went through like two rounds of revisions, and there were lots of changes made. And getting his perspective on things was really great. And he noticed things about my script that I just did not notice myself. Like, some of the dialogue was really repetitive, and he pointed that out, and how there were certain scenes that were just too slow and kind of unnecessary. So I did revise the script more. And then once that was done, that's when it came to looking for an artist, which I would say is the hardest part, because you can't just like find any artist. Like, you have to find an artist that has experience doing comic books.
Yeah.
Not only do they have to have experience doing comic books and doing it well, they also have to have endurance. And by endurance, I mean like they have to be able to produce a minimum of like 3 pages a week. The comic book industry is notorious for really high turnover. And oftentimes, if you hire an artist who doesn't have experience working in comic books, they'll quit after page 8 or page 9. It's important to have an artist that has like the endurance and can actually finish the book. Something I did was I experimented with having different artists do paid test pages, because I found that a lot of artists, they're not as good as their portfolio. Like, their portfolio is their best work, but not their typical work. So
yeah,
having paid test pages works really well. Another issue that I found is that some artists will use stolen artwork in their portfolio. So it's important to do like a reverse Google image search on some of these portfolio pieces.
But especially these days, you want to make sure that you're not opening yourself up to any sort of litigation.
Yeah. And another issue I ran into is that there's like these artists that will put like AI art in their portfolio and try to like pass it off as something that they themselves drew, when it's kind of obvious that it was created with, like, they'll have like 6 fingers or
AI stuff.
Yeah. And like their faces are like weird. So you can like kind of tell that's Midjourney art. Like, there's like a style to like Midjourney art. So like after a while, it becomes like really easy to identify AI art and real art. Yeah. And
that's wild. It creates like this whole other level of just a minefield of issues, because if you wind up stumbling on some work that you're not even sure, you don't even know that it's AI until after the fact, and then you find out, I mean, it's just like a death knell for it, because no one wants to support AI stuff, AI art. Conventions are tossing people when they find out they make AI work, and rightfully so, because it's supposed to be your work. You're supposed to basically put the time in and effort into learning your craft and not just relying on the work of so many other people who may or may not have knowingly put their work into the AI system. So yeah, it's scary out there.
I also saw Kickstarter, like, their policy is that if you use AI in your project, you have to disclose it and make it clear this was made using AI. And something I noticed is that AI projects on Kickstarter generally do not get much money. Like, they generally do very poorly.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And rightfully so. It's like, yeah, like once people know that that things are AI, then a lot of people will not only shut it down, but they'll make sure to let other people know as well. So like, hey, this is AI. This project has AI in it. Don't invest in it. Don't justify their use of AI by investing in it.
Yeah. So, and that's another reason behind like doing paid test pages is that you can like kind of filter out the people that are using AI, because like you can like put like specific details when you're like requesting these test pages, so that like what I mean is, something that I noticed that AI can't really do very well is wide shots or characters that are not centered, because like it's like the way AI is done is it tries to make the shot as close as possible, and they always have the main character or the subject in the middle.
Yeah.
It's never to the side, but when requesting a test page, you can ask them, hey, put this character to the left side, and then make it a wide shot, which is something AI can't do. And once you find an artist, the next step for me was creating storyboards. So I would work with the artist to map out the panels and what's going to happen on each page. During the storyboarding process, we found that some panels needed to be removed or combined, and then sometimes we had to add additional panels in to make the story flow better.
Mm-hmm.
And then once the storyboard is complete, it would be the line art. So the artist would draw the black and white lines of the art, and then once that's done, it would be the time to color the art. So I worked with a different artist to color the pages. So one artist was like a line artist that did like the line arts and also the storyboards, and then another mm-hmm. artist was the colorist. So he basically colored everything in, and then after that I worked with a letterer. So this is another artist, and what he does is he does sound effects and speech bubbles, and then once that's all done, then it comes time for
the inking
or the pre-press. And then I also worked with other artists to create multiple covers for the books.
Nice.
Yeah. So Return of the Rooftop Koreans has like 5 different variant covers. So I know that there's a lot of comic book collectors that love to collect different variants.
Yeah.
And obviously there with variants, I make sure that each variant has like a very different art style. So if like one art style doesn't appeal to like a potential customer, another one mm-hmm. might. So once I got like all the covers done, all the pages done and everything, I had a guy in Pakistan put that all together into a file to have that ready to print. And now I'm at the stage where all I got to do is print it. So once it's printed, it's done.
Nice. Nice, man. I'm so thrilled for you that you're this far into the process. And now it's just a matter of getting the amount of copies all set up. I'm so excited for you. I'm excited for the whole team to have put all this together. Do you have anything planned in terms of a launch or anything once you have your release date locked in?
So my plan is, as I mentioned, I'm using Kickstarter for pre-orders. I put the project on Kickstarter, and I also put it on Indiegogo as well.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I did that is because the thing about Kickstarter is that you can't use PayPal.
Right.
You can only use like your credit card. And another thing is that most people in South Korea, they don't have like an international credit card. Mm-hmm. What I mean is that like in South Korea, there's like domestic credit cards and then there's like international credit cards. Mm-hmm. And getting an international credit card is like really difficult. So most people only have like a domestic credit card that he only used on like Korean businesses and Korean websites. And yeah, like that's kind of how it is over there. And
it was very contained.
And because Kickstarter does not accept PayPal, essentially Kickstarter is useless for Korean people. Like no one uses it. It's just unusable. Mm-hmm. So however, Indiegogo does accept PayPal. So that's like the reason why I also had a campaign on Indiegogo alongside one on Kickstarter. So that's the way I kind of like the things.
That's smart. Why limit yourself? You want to make sure that you get all of the different prospects as much as possible. A lot of writers do that as well. I know I did when I was indie before I set up shop with my current publisher. But when people were always asking just like, how do I get my books from Amazon into bookstores? Because bookstores won't take books that are from Amazon. They won't order from Amazon. It's a company that's trying to put them out of business. So if you own your own ISBN, you can use that to set up the book on Amazon, and then you can set up the same book using the same ISBN on Ingram Spark. And so the bookstores will have no problem ordering from Ingram Spark, but they have a lot of problems ordering from Amazon. So you're able to kind of get everyone at once by doing that.
I do plan on having the book sent to the printer sometime in early October, and then the printing process, I've heard it can take anywhere from 3 to 6 weeks. And then once that's printed out, I would be fulfilling the books, you know, packing them, putting them in clear bags and putting them in mailers so I can mail them out. Yeah, so I plan on doing that before Christmas. And then something in December or maybe in January, I might relaunch my book on my website and sell it directly to the consumer there. So that's kind of my plan.
And you would be able to take orders after the pre-order thing is all finished. You'd be able to still take orders through your website, right?
So that's the plan, is to take orders on my website. Once the Kickstarter is done and once fulfillment for that is done, I'll relaunch on my website. And my website is still in the works. It doesn't actually work right now. Like there's a lot of issues. So I'm working with a Pakistani web development company that, so they're kind of working on my website, making that work. So I'll say like sometime before, I guess maybe in December or January, my website should be ready to go.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, I'm really excited about where this is going to go. I know that I can say my dog is definitely excited for it as well. And I'm looking forward to seeing how this all comes together. One thing that I always like to hear from my guests is if there is anyone that is looking to kind of go in the same direction that you are in terms of they have an idea for a comic, whether it's a series, whether it is a one-shot graphic novel, whatever the case. But if they have an idea, they want to see it to fruition, but they have no idea where to start, what is something that you would recommend to them?
I would say, so when it comes to starting, I would say that rather than trying to wait for the perfect moment or the perfect time to start, just start right now. Mm-hmm. Write your idea on a piece of paper. Start with writing a one-sentence summary of what your comic or graphic novel is about. Then take that mm-hmm. one sentence, turn it into one paragraph, and then turn it into one page. So, and then I would say expand upon that and eventually turn that into a comic book script. And as I mentioned earlier, read books like Comic Book Writing for Dummies and Saves the Cat. So that's what I would recommend that people do to start with their comic book creation process.
Excellent. And since you said your website is currently in flux, can my listeners find you on social media?
Yeah, just Google Return of the Rooftop Koreans and you'll definitely find me on social media.
Excellent. Excellent. I am so pumped for what Lee is doing right now. I am so thrilled to see that he's been able to make this happen and is going forward with everything. And I'm loving the way that he is able to take the pre-orders. Now, granted, by the time you hear this, the pre-order time will have passed, but the information for how to order the books from then on will be available on the show notes here. But I just love the fact that this was an idea that was, in Lee's own words, it was a very raw idea. He was able to take it, work with it, and make it grow into something that can be a legitimate story. And then he wrote it. And now it's ready, getting ready to come out in a fully realized graphic novel format. This is definitely a success story for Excelsior Journeys, The Road to Creativity. And I am just really excited to have heard this. I hope that you have as well. I hope that Lee's story has been just as inspiring and motivating for you as it was for me. And just like I've said many times, in these crazy times, we need your stories, we need your vision, we need your ideas now more than ever. And so for T.Y. Lee, this is George Soroy saying to all of you, ever upward, and I will see you next week.
Thank you very much for listening to this episode of Excelsior Journeys. I hope it was both inspiring and entertaining. Special thanks to Zach Comtois for providing new music for the intro and outro. Please take a moment to leave a rate and review on Apple Podcasts. And if you enjoy the show, please share it with your friends and subscribe to your platform of choice by going to heesgotit.com/podcasts. While there, you can also fill out the application to be a guest, inquire about sponsorship opportunities, and click on the Buy Me a Coffee link if you wish to give your support to the show. All interaction is very much appreciated. If you have a question, comment, or suggestion for the show, please direct it to George@heesgotit.com.